Leafs talk, JD Bugis, Sam McKee. Leafs get a very, very, very rare W in Illinois. They beat the Chicago Blackhawks 5-2. I was completely unaware that the Leafs hadn't had a regulation win there since 2003. Were you? Like, did you know that stat?
I feel like that's one that comes around every year that I always forget about. And yeah, it feels weird because the Leafs have won there a few times, like recently. Like, they won that one where the double with Patty Kane with Austin Matthews doing the thing to the crowd where he had his hand up to his ear. And then they had the season-saving win where if they had a lost to that in the alternative universe, it would have made the playoffs. And David Camp scored two goals. Willie scored in overtime. So, like, they've had some good memories there over the last little
first,
while.
The first Camp game where we were like, oh, my God, this guy's far down specialist.
And he had like a really nice backhand goal in that third period, if I remember correctly. And it's so pathetic that I can remember that and not other things in my life. But
go ahead. You want an even more pathetic memory of a Chicago win? An overtime win? Was that game one was that was a Garrett Sparks referendum game. He let in, I think, 5 goals. And then he was like, I think I did pretty great. And we were all like, oh,
Cam Ward was in net for the Blackhawks that night. So
all I remember was he was so proud of himself after letting in 5 stinkers. And there was this whole McElhinney Sparks debate. And I was on the wrong side of history on that one. I was team Sparks. Got to go with the young guy.
I think Sparks is still playing. I think he's still playing. Maybe like in the Vegas system, maybe. Anyways, that's not what we need to spend time talking about.
Hey, listen, that's what people come here for. Is sometimes there's a little bit of leafy memories.
Garrett Sparks he's just quite a looking. He's playing for the Wheeling Nailers in the ECHL. Played 5 games this year. He's got a 4 goals against and an 8-4-3 save. Had a tough year for the Nailers.
And I thought he was the future of the organization at one point.
Hey, man, first goalie in Leafs history to have a shutout in their debut.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool stat to something. Have.
Hey, can't take that one off the board.
No, you cannot.
Okay, so the Leafs, they win tonight, and I think that there's a couple pretty salient talking points, but we got to start with the third line.
Okay. I thought you wanted to start with the most confusing and long offside review on a 4-2 goal in hockey history, on a meaningless goal.
All right, let's just get that out of the way then, because I'll tell you this. For it to go that long is completely unacceptable.
Criminal.
But also, for that to be offside, like, good on Mike Johnson, who
nailed
knew
it.
The rule.
Nailed
and
it.
Crushed it right away, because I was like, you and I both think, like, oh, offside. I'll tell you right now, that is the most against the spirit of the rule thing that has ever happened in the history of sports. Like, if that's not offside, like, again, this is worse than is it a catch?
Yeah, that was – there haven't been many against the spirit of the rule things like that in a lot. Like, that is as big as it gets. And it's just – the thing that it highlights for me is that we got to shorten up these reviews. They're finding some – like, next year, there's got to be how long for you? A minute?
No, you get more than a minute, because sometimes you got – because they don't get all the camera feeds in right away, right? And they've got to be able to look at them and slow them down. I would say 2 minutes is the max. That's what I would set it at. I think 2 minutes is fair. Get it in, get it done. And if you can't get it in 2 minutes, then it's over. Well, it just, to me, it's like once it passes 2 minutes, like, it's irrefutable to me, or irreversible, or whatever the word is that I'm supposed to know
here. If you're watching on YouTube, I've just watched hockey my whole life. It's offside.
Yeah.
It's the most offside thing I've ever seen. It's
like, brother, he's offside. In the white, as the puck crosses. It's not even like a fringy borderline one. I actually thought that because of the spirit of the rule and it was inconclusive, that the refs are just going to go like, but come on.
Yeah, exactly. Come on. Anyways, so there you go. They salted away. Good for them.
Yeah.
They get the Pontus Holmberg lighting it up on the empty net in the last couple games. So good for him.
Well, actually, since we started here, which I'm a little surprised by, I thought this was going to be a rapid fire topic. What do you make? Like, I was like, you're dying to get this one off your chest from this game. Poor Nick Robertson scores 2 goals. Domi finally contributes. And you're like, what about the rules? How did you feel about that stat, too, that the Leafs have given up the most empty net goals against in the NHL? Because I'm of two minds with it.
The two minds would be, one, that they're in the position to defend 6-on-5 a lot, which means they're leading a lot of games. But the other side that you're probably thinking is, that's not the stat that you want to be bad at, because you, like, if you're leading a lot of games, it's a really important thing. And the Leafs used to be a really good 6-on-5 the other way. I don't know what their stats used to be. I don't know if that's a thing that's followed them throughout this era, or that's a Berube thing, or I don't know what it is, but it's not a stat I love, especially come playoff time. So those are your two minds. I read your mind tonight. I had your
Okay. You kind of read it. So it's not a great stat, but I will say this. I think it's actually a pretty explainable stat. So the Leafs haven't blown any leads still this season, right? Like, they don't, they don't blow leads. They don't cough it up when it matters. But I think that what ends up happening with them is something that we've seen the last couple of nights, which is they get pretty horned up with the net wide open, right? Like, they start to get pretty aggressive. They got a couple of guys on their team that enjoy the cookies, and who could blame them, because cookies are delicious. But I think that before that final one, like before it's actually a one goal game, they play pretty loose, and they're cookie hunting a lot of times, rather than just like knuckling down, trying to kill pucks, putting it into the boards and just saying like eat clock. I think they love scoring empty net goals, and their aggression bites them in the ass at times. But to their credit, they haven't lost those games. And so I don't really think it's a major issue. I actually don't think it's something that's going to carry over the playoffs, because come that time, I'm hoping that they will treat it a little bit more seriously, and that those habits. Yeah. Those habits are regular season habits. Fair. Yeah.
Very fair. And I mean, it's definitely game 57 against the crappy Blackhawks hunting for cookies. You'll let it go a little bit here. I think you'll allow it, but it's good. It's a good thought, but they lead a lot. So it's good that they have that situation. Anyways.
Yeah. 100%. All right.
Max Domi time. We were just beating back the praise of Max Domi by talking about the rules and 6-on-5.
Well, I got to tell you, Max Domi, beautiful play after the power, or like at the very end of the power play. Good forecheck by Bobby McMahon. Like, you and I talked last game about how that line has been invisible when the three of them were put together. And listen, it's a game against the Chicago Blackhawks, and it's kind of hard to blow this one completely out of proportion. So if you just want to localize it to this game, I thought it was a needed performance for those guys. Robertson ends up hitting double digits in goals. Good for him, because I wrote it down actually before this game even started. Funny enough, Robertson now, I think, has played in 135 games in his career, 136, and he now has 27 goals. And so I do think that this is a bit of a prove it period for him to be able to put a couple pucks in the back of the net. But yeah, I think that these two goals are largely created by Max Domi, who absolutely was dying to get off the schneid in some kind of way. Beautiful vision on the first one on the power play, and then great hustle on the second one. Still not exactly sure how Nick Robertson ends up being this wide open at the end of the period. But also so funny that it's like, you get this moment, I tweet about it, and then a second later, Domi is just completely swimming.
Trying
desperately to just get a piece of a puck, and the Chicago makes it 3-2. And you go, that's what you get, Berube, for rewarding them and letting them try to close out a period. You give up a bad goal. But overall, a pretty awesome night for those guys. I thought they were buzzing for the vast majority of it. They were creating plays. They felt like they had a ton of ice. And I do think that a byproduct of that was, Chicago was a little bit on their heels when they were out there. But, good night for the third line. Toronto needed it tonight.
Yeah, for sure. I think, this will kind of lend itself into a conversation about the Stars after this. But we talked last night about the secondary scoring and the contributions from the bottom half of the lineup. You get two goals from defensemen tonight. You get two goals from this line tonight. You need this. This is what you need on, like I said, game 57 against the AHL competition Blackhawks.
Yep.
You need the guys at the bottom half of your lineup to contribute and to look good. And like, other teams get this like all the time. So it's like, you look around the league, there's other teams that third lines do this every night, where they like, not every night, but they're giving good contributions. They're playing well, they're noticeable. So it's really good for when the Leafs stars come back from the Four Nations, and specifically Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, who I don't think either have looked very full of life, will I say, through the two games this weekend. You needed this contribution, and I felt like Domi, McMahon, and Robertson from the start of the game were really engaged, really dangerous, like you said, and just skating by. I mean, how about Seth Jones there? Has the head start on Domi, and Domi just barbecues him. It's like, yeah, I bet you want to trade out of here, but like, who's going to take you, brother? Sorry, yeah, but like, holy smokes. I like, he makes $9.5 million. Anyways, I was just really impressed with them, and who cares who you're playing against? You need to have, like, they've had lots of bad nights against lots of bad teams. So good for Domi to really contribute tonight. Maybe that can get him going a bit, because boy, they could use his offensive chip in here, because he makes, the most outside the core four for forwards. So they need it from him, and he looked good. So kudos to him.
Quick Seth Jones aside, you and I were both just massive fans of him. Do you remember last year in Columbus?
Loved him.
Yeah. Like the last year in Columbus, and then when they traded him, we were like, I can't believe that this guy who a year ago we thought was going to be like one of the future stars of the game is in Chicago now, and yeah, has just been a total bust for them. Like,
man, the rare lose trade.
Yeah, yeah.
Who did they trade? No, never mind. I got that wrong. I thought that was they traded him from Nashville for Ryan Johansson. I was thinking it was Chicago from Ryan Johansson. I forget who they traded. Was it Bulkvist and something? Maybe I can't remember exactly what the trade was.
Yeah, just has been an absolute zero for them. And you're right. Like, if you know, he's on the block and he wants out of there, he wants to go to contender. He's the kind of guy that I'm sure does go to a contender and finds his game again. Like, that would be my guess. But
Kipper was mentioning Dallas for him on the show on Friday. And I'm like, God, that does make sense where he'd go there and just be sick for Dallas. You could see that happening 100%. Yes.
But how much money are you going to get them to eat? Because him on his current deal, even with the cap going up, you can't even take that risk. Anyways, back to the Domi thing. So I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to like blow this out of proportion, because again, the Blackhawks are god awful. And a couple of those plays, like, again, credit to Domi tonight. Like, they needed to have it. Just the bigger takeaway for me is kind of what you said there, which is the Leafs are a super top heavy team, like just an incredibly top heavy team. They get all their scoring from their top five guys. And every once in a while, and especially on a back-to-back, when those guys are coming back from the Four Nations and they've probably got extremely heavy legs flying into Chicago, Matthews and Marner just played one of the most intense games of their lives. They didn't have it fully tonight. And those guys picked them up and they gave them some offense. The blue line picked them up, right? Tanev scores one, McCabe scores one. And just like every once in a while, you just need to be able to do that with this team. And if you're going to finish first, if you're going to pass Florida,
which they did today, by the way, they're back in first.
Yeah, there's going to be a couple more of these ones, right? Where like you're not leaning on those top guys and you actually feel like you have a chance to win, because the formula so far this season has been, if the top guys aren't scoring, you got to win 1-0 essentially, right? You got to get spectacular goaltending. And tonight they let in a couple, they're trailing in the game, and the third line and that blue line picked them up. So good for them.
Yep, absolutely. And you mentioned Chris Tanev scored tonight, and watching him play, you know, there's been a lot of talk about best on best and how much better that hockey was and all the different stuff like going into watching these games. Chris Tanev is a guy to me that could have played in those games. Watched him play tonight. Like, he is so, so steady. He is such a stud. Like, I just, I can't believe what this guy has meant to this team. Like, you know, I was so excited that they got him. We famously did a podcast last year where I cried for 25 minutes because the Leafs didn't get him. I've loved this guy for a long time, but he's even exceeded my expectations in terms of how good he still is. Like, you had the worries in the back of your mind of his age and, you know, the injury stuff and just all the obvious worries, but they have just gotten, what's he making now? 4.5 this year for the contract? Is that what it is?
I think it's a little over that. I think it's closer to 5, but you could be
whatever
right.
Whatever it is. They're just getting such incredible value on it. And he's just the way he stops cycles and little breakout moves that he makes. It's not even these long stretch breakout passes, but these little interceptions, these little area passes. It's just, he is so, so, so steady. And, you know, if we're looking ahead to the playoffs, I know we don't want to do that. We're just talking about tonight, but it is, thanks, Brandon. It is 4.5 is his cap hit. So that's
6 incredible. Years, 4.5.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to talk about the year 4, 5, and 6 about that right now. But like going into the playoffs, what gives you hope about this being any different is him and McCabe and the goalies, right? Like, he is a true, true difference maker. And you love to see a guy like that get a cookie here and there. He never gets them. He never really overdoes it. And he gets an ugly one, trickles into the net, and you get to put a goal in the goal column for Chris Tanev. He was awesome tonight again. He was awesome in both games.
And like to the contract point though, because it is 6 years, like I'll just say this is like you are getting crazy value for him on the front end. So even if it hurts the last couple of years, Chris Tanev at 4.5 this season is a steal. Like not to I'll just because of a comparison, but it's like look at what Morgan Riley makes versus Chris Tanev and how different this team would be with one guy versus the other, right? You're at least getting a $3 million break on this player on the front of the contract. So I just think that it's important for people to remember that when like the contract starts to turn a little bit. Like TJ Brody was out there tonight for Chicago.
Oh my God.
Did you remember that he was on that team?
Yeah, no. And then it, you know, the puck bounces off him into the net. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. It's like, it was him and Mikheyev were out there and I went, boy, I used to love you guys.
And I did. I had some conversations about you two boys, let me tell you.
Yeah, like, and they're just stuck out there in no man's land. God, Chicago is just depressing, dude. For them to turn this thing around is going to take some real time.
I have some thought on that quickly, but just the top pair for the Leafs tonight, Tanev and McCabe, both the 4 points combined, plus six combined, six shots block combined between the two of them. You know, 21-49 for McCabe, 20-33. Like, they're just a real NHL shutdown top pair. And they're just awesome tonight.
So. Before we move to your Chicago thought, I do want to kind of close with the Leafs' performance, though, tonight, which is, okay, so I asked the guys to clip this for me, but the Leafs played a horrific first period. Like,
so bad.
It was dog's breakfast. They were lucky to only be down 1-0. Tanev actually takes the cross check at the end of the period. Yeah. And Chicago scores a goal that is like a really actually nice play, but a bit of a lucky play for Bertuzzi where puck kind of bounces to him. He kind of chops at it, lands right on Teravainen's stick. It's 1-0. I'm starting to think, God, this is going to be one of those games, right? Like Chicago might beat the Leafs 4-0 tonight. Like that's kind of the game
script. Like that.
Yeah. Like that's the way that I was feeling. They scored just a late period goal after dominating and the Leafs were kind of holding on. One goes in, and I'm thinking the start of the second period is going to be crucial for this team. And I know that some people are going to think like, hey, Matthews, Marner, and Nylander, and Tavares, they weren't at their very best tonight. But I got to tell you, I'm giving a lot of credit to the captain, to Austin Matthews for the start of this period because he comes out and he has this shift. And it actually reminded me a little bit of Four Nations where it's like, he's getting down low. He's winning puck battles. He's using his body. And then all of a sudden, like him and Nyes are around the net and creating traffic. Marner gets that opportunity that like misses the net from the slot. But like they're down there bumping and grinding, trying to create havoc, trying to be around the net. And I went, you know, I said on my podcast, I think on Friday before you came on that Matthew Nyes, I hope watches what Brady Tkachuk did in that tournament and says, boy, me and Matthews could be a real problem. Matthew's a big boy. Yeah. Like Matthews a big man. And I kind of hope that his game, as time goes on, he starts to gravitate more towards that area of the ice. And then look what happens afterwards. The Leafs just end up caving in Chicago for, I think it was 3 or 4 straight shifts before they actually draw a penalty. And then the second unit actually gets one late on the power play and kind of breaks the game open and changes it for Toronto. So I do think that this team follows Austin Matthews' lead. I do think that he is the energizer, the tone setter, the attitude, whatever it is. And I don't think he had his legs tonight, man. How could you blame him, right? Like Four Nations final, played last night. All these guys are banged up. They were talking about the toll on their bodies on the plane ride back, for God's sakes. I'm imagining they're hurting, but he gave them that spark at the beginning of that period. And I really do think that it turned the tide for Toronto.
Yeah, I think that's really well said and well pointed out. How long are we giving him here? Tuesday night? Is you expecting back to full speed here in terms of like how long they're getting back into the swing after that Four Nations?
I actually think that Tuesday is going to be a bit of a tough one too. Like that's 3 games in 4 nights.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. It's a bit of a tough schedule, man. This is kind of why, like when we're talking about those secondary scorers, this is a moment, this is an opportunity for them because I think those guys have to know that they don't have the trust of the coaching staff, that their big dogs are probably going to be a little bit worn out here ahead of the deadline, and that jobs are on the line. Like, if you're Nick Robertson and Alex Steeves puts one in the net, you better go out and respond with some goals of your own. Because again, like 10 goals on the season, it's like, it looks fine-ish in the context of this team.
It's but crazy when that's that high. I'm surprised he's that high, that 10. Well,
the thing is though, is like, yeah, it comes in multi-goal games, but it's been in some spots where it hasn't been of like the greatest import. And like, if you're the Leafs, you got to be thinking with players like that, are you going to get goals like the second one? Where Domi wins that puck or that race against Seth Jones. Are you going to get goals like that?
The third one. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to get goals like that in the playoffs? Right? Like, are you going to be able to create those opportunities? So to me, it's like, they've got to show quite a bit of consistency to try to earn the trust of this coaching staff. I think like, they're short on centermen, but I do think that it's kind of an indictment that like Holmberg gets the bump up to the second line over Max Domi. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's about like trusting Max and trying to find something with that group. I think that's like, we still don't even want you up here.
I think there's a pretty clear, maybe not, I'm not reporting anything, but if you're just watching the way Max Domi has been used this year, you know, him and Berube, maybe not the best of friends in terms of what they think their role is to each other.
He never buries them though.
Never does. Never, it's not like, but I just mean, you just watch the way he uses them. He's underused compared to what he was last year with Keefe. Blackhawks.
Yeah, sure. I'm ready to go into kind of like rapid fire. Like, I will say too, Domi hit that crossbar where it's like, if that one goes in, he's like really feeling good. What?
And I was texting you, Gord Miller almost had like the best call ever there. Yeah. He was talking about the last time that they won in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he was going through all the people that played. Balfour was in net for the Leafs, all this stuff. And he's like, and Ty Domi had a goal in that game.
Yeah.
And here right comes before. Max. And like, literally as it was rolling off his tongue, he rings it off the bar. He was so close. That was crazy. But how long until the Blackhawks are half decent? Like, what's the plan? They got nobody. I just like that Kurashev they were talking about. He's -75 or -74 in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But Dard doesn't look very good. He's not playing with anybody good. He's like clearly getting losing habits where he's taking too long his shifts. He's not like getting the puck in deep. He's not playing. Like, I don't know what the hell they're doing, but it's going to be a long, long time before they're even half decent.
So
they stink.
I think there's a couple things here. One, I'm not a big farm system guy, so like I'm not fully up to date with what they've got going on underneath.
Sure, they got prospects. They've sucked for a while. They've got to have some. Yeah. That Nazar they like. That Frank Nazar they like.
Yeah, but they don't have like other guys that it's like, oh my God, they're just so loaded and wait until you see next year, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not a situation like that. I'm not going to profess to be, you know, Corey Pronman
or
Sam Cosentino over here.
I didn't realize that. -3 for Bedard tonight. I didn't realize that.
That's kind of where I'm going with this, though. It's like there was reporting earlier this year that Bedard's already a little frustrated with what's going on here. And it's not like he's really helping things because he's been pretty awful. Like, the panel did the, like, is this guy going to be on Team Canada next year? And I'm like, the only case for it right now is that it's the bigger ice surface. And
no shot, buddy. Like,
but my counter to it was like, I can't believe no one brought this up when they were talking about it. Could you have imagined he was in that game?
Oh, no.
No.
We've seen what it looks like. That's the thing. It's like, it's been so long since we've seen it. And I'm just watching these guys. I'm like, there's no way Connor Bedard plays over 3 minutes in that hockey game.
No. In fact, it's like, looking back on it and where he is now, it's one of the most ridiculous conversations we had all year long. Yes. Like, is he on the team? It's like, buddy, there's 7-8 guys that are ahead of him right now. Easily. Like, easily.
Konecny couldn't play in the game. Marchand played 11 minutes. It's like these guys are studs. Like,
I'm just saying, think about some of the guys they left off, but even think about some of the other young guys in the league, like Fantilli or like, it's just like, there's Delevingne. So many. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's just, I he's obviously not a bust. You're going to give him time, but next year for him is already just a crucial year. He's got a ton of points for a guy like that was still a teenager. And like, you can look at the numbers. There's a lot of them that are still pretty positive with him, but yeah, I just watching him play, just there's not a lot of encouraging signs there for me whenever I do tune in to see Connor Bedard play hockey.
Sure. He's got points, but somebody's got to score.
Somebody's got to score. And it's like 20, he's got 20 minutes of ice time.
Exactly. Exactly. Somebody's got to shoot in the net. So he's my boy. I loved him in junior. I professed my love for him. I said he's going to score 50 goals in his rookie season. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really hoping my Bedard takes turn. But
everybody hopes they turn. Nobody's rooting against them.
I mean, the thing is now that we have best on best every 2 years, and we need these guys. We've seen the way the juniors have looked for 3 years now. That's who grows into playing in the games we watch on the weekend.
Yeah.
So we need those guys to kind of start being good, and he's part of that. So we need him. We need
again,
him. We got Gavin McKenna. So
I'm calling him Northern McDavid.
Buddy, the pass he made today, go on Twitter if you're watching this and go to the Medicine Hat Tigers Twitter feed. I wanted to find I was digging hard for the pass that McDavid made. McDavid made the exact same play. I forget, maybe he passed it to Duncan Keith, I want to say, which is crazy that I remember that, or somebody. Maybe he was on. Anyways, it's very, very similar play. He looks like Connor McDavid of the North, and he's your son. So
I got to tell you.
He's got no Habs for him, eh, bud?
Oh, God. I actually think I don't want to take this too far, but I've had some tragedies in my life, and that would be slotting right under the death tier in terms of
a lot of death talk for you last week.
I'm just saying that death tier is one, but if Gavin McKenna went to the Habs, it would be like when the Sonics left Seattle for me. It'd be worse than the Seahawks losing the Super Bowl on the 1 yard line, not handing it to the greatest goal line back of his generation.
The dream scenario is Sharks.
Sharks is
dream scenario.
I got to tell you though, there's one thing that is a true threat to this program right now. If people love this show,
Sharks talk
is that I love my son so deeply. He has reinvigorated my childhood fandom in sports. I care so much about Gavin McKenna. I got so much stock invested in him that it's I kind of think the Leafs need to trade for Dylan Cousins because if they don't do it, I don't know how they can keep me.
The Yukon Leafs.
I've got this old school retro starter jacket, Sharks, teal, that I could throw on. I could just be that guy, retro Sharks fits. I could just be that guy. Nightmare would be Anaheim too. Anaheim is just where players go to die. Loser franchise. I've said a billion times. I didn't want Bedard to go there, but now I'm God, Chicago's such a bad situation that maybe he would have been better off.
But maybe McKenna goes there too, and they kind of team up, and that's they're 1-2 punch or whatever. So maybe that. But anyways.
Sharks are cracking is my hope.
We need Bedard to hit bad. We really do. As Canadian hockey fans, we need him to turn it around. We do. He needs to contribute to the national team, buddy. He came up all through the ranks, playing at every level, dominating at every level for Team Canada. The next step is, listen, Sid was talking about how all the guys he played with in junior are now gone, right? He was talking about how it's just him and Doughty that played coming up, and then anyways, you need it. You need him to contribute. Anyways,
I just think we've got a lot of good guys.
We do.
We got a lot of good young guys. And it's I don't know, man. I just if I'm going to watching, for example, Jack Hughes at that tournament where
he's brutal.
Yeah. He's just like literally everybody at the Athletics, he's the face of the league.
He's going to fall over again in a big game.
Yeah. And then it's he plays in a big, tight, check game. And I don't know if you're a Devils fan, how you could watch that and have real confidence in
Sheldon Keefe's how did I do this again?
Yeah, he's right pick where he started.
Not again.
But I don't know, dude. I got same vibes from Bedard where I have a tough time picturing a scenario where I'm going to look at him at the international level. I hope this gets clipped. I hope this turns into the biggest stupid idiot take ever. Yeah. I just got a tough time picturing him best on best against the Americans in a do or die game. And I'm get him over the boards. Right now, anyways.
That's a fair take. No, hey, listen, right now, you're right. And yeah. I'm just holding out hope on Bedard Island. That's it.
Yeah, of course. The talent's there. The skill's there. Just, yeah. God, he's just in such a bad spot. And, like, the game. And the game's getting heavier, too. Like, hockey's kind of getting a bit of a return to heavy play because these playoffs have kind of gone over and over this. They've done the, like, small skill guy, tons of small skill defensemen that haven't really worked out. And it's like, yeah, maybe, just maybe, it's going to get tougher for some of the small guys. And it's not going to just turn into the, like, you know, the tiny boy league. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe.
All good. I'm fine, bud.
Oh, yeah. My last rapid fire topic was just like, it's just another completely brutal night for the second or the third pairing where I was like,
oh, my God.
Benoit has that huge hit on Bedard.
Yeah, but hammered him.
Yeah. But other than that, it was like,
they're a nightmare. They're a nightmare.
They come over and you're just sitting there staring at them like, please don't, please don't, please don't. And like, I don't remember Benoit. I know we've made the like Simon Lafleur jokes, like how he likes to jump up in the rush every once in a while, but like, I don't remember him making this many Dumbo plays in his own end where it's like hunting big hits like that one or just like poor clearing decisions. Like he ends up getting hemmed in for a shift tonight because he doesn't make like a simple clear. Like the whole premise of the Berube guys we've had is, hey, they just chop it out. Right. And his game is just way too cute right now. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think that neither of these guys should be on the playoff roster, and I feel like one of them, Benoit, is going to be, which, yeah. Ugh.
But, like, what – I mean, where – you're a one injury to the top four away from these guys playing big minutes. Mm-hmm. The depth is not there. That's why it's like, you know, you talk about the forwards, you talk about what they need. They need a lot because, like, they are – and maybe somebody impactful, like, that – that Tippett Ristolainen package, not Tippett. I thought, not Tippett. What's the other guy? Lawton. I was thinking I had Tippett on my mind for some reason, but Lawton, that Lawton Ristolainen package is one you're like, oh, you know, may cost you something, but that changes the way your roster looks. And Ristolainen's not perfect, but he's a real NHL defenseman. That like that line that sort of rounds out your defensive core a little bit better. You need a real D man. You need a real.
Yeah, I agree. And that. Just that trade package is just like the quintessential. Can you believe they traded for Lawton and Ristolainen and gave up this pick? Yes, and now and you're like, man. And like 4 years later, you just have your head in your hands going,
No question. You're 100% correct.
Did this trade. It's just the ultimate bozo one. Like, and
totally right.
You just don't want to be the team that makes a trade worse than the Rantanen trade. Like that's.
I love you, buddy. Nice. I accept. Handshake, sir.
All right, let's wrap this sucker up. It's Sunday night. Let's everybody go to bed. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at JD Marcus, at Sam A. McKee. Reach out anytime. We always love hearing from you. Please share the podcast. Hit the thumbs up on YouTube, subscribe, review, do those things. And I'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on my show. And Sammy's got Real Kipper and Born tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock. See you then. And then we'll see you, Tuesday night? Yeah.
Tuesday against the Bees.
Tuesday against the Bruins. See you then.